Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. If you'd like to join our writing community on Discord and get access to fantasy writing classes and books on Patreon, check the links in the description. And if you don't want to miss any future episodes, be sure to follow or subscribe. And to support the show, leave a quick rating on Spotify or iTunes and share this episode on social media or with anyone who you think may be interested. Thank you very much for listening. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. I'm your host, Richie Billing, and today I'm delighted to be joined by a real leader in the world of children's literature, Meredith Davis. Meredith, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to introduce children's books to a population that doesn't know it as well.
Oh, definitely. And that's one of the reasons I was so excited to have you on, because we've covered a lot of adults fiction and a lot of YA as well. We've had some really great authors on, like Mary Pearson and a few others who really specialize in YA, but nothing really with children's literature. And It's a void that I wanted to fill for so long, because so many people have asked questions about writing for children. And my own brother-in-law wanted my help to write a children's book. And that's something I want to do, but I just don't really know anything about it. So yeah. I don't think we could have asked for a better guest, because not only are you an award-winning writer, but you're the founder of the Austin chapter of the Society of Children's Books Writers and Illustrators. And you also hold an MFA in writing for children and young adults from the Vermont College of Fine Arts too.
That's right.
Yeah.
Lots going on. You know, all of that, and I still don't think of myself as an expert. There's so much to learn and know, but I've been doing it a long time. I'm very involved in the world of children's books. So yeah, happy to share what I know.
And on top of all of that, you've got a brand new children's adventure book out soon, The Minor Miracle. Congratulations. Yep.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We're excited.
And it's going to be published on the 7th of May, 2024 by Waterbrook, which is an imprint of Penguin Random House. Very, very nice.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, I'm very excited. It's coming together great. In fact, we're just now transitioning over to start thinking about marketing, working on book two. So yeah, It's going to be exciting.
Nice, nice. Yeah. So how did it all begin? And can you tell us a bit about the book, which is, I suppose, the end points of where we are in this journey so far?
Yeah. Where did it all begin? Well, so where I began as a writer, I guess I'll start there, because I did have a book come out before The Minor Miracle. So I started wanting to write children's books even before my kids were born, but didn't know a whole lot about the industry. It was not my major or anything like that. So I started working at an independent children's bookstore and got like a huge education. So anytime somebody comes to me and wants to like, no, what should I do? I want to write children's books. I always tell them, go hang out in a children's bookstore and just, whether you're working there or you're just like visiting it, like check out what's on the shelves, because that's what's being published. So don't just rely on what you knew and what you loved as a kid, but look at what's still out there, maybe including the classics that you loved, but also like the ones that are being published now. So anyways, I got an education starting there. And then I got to know the community through the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, which is international. I don't know if you have a chapter in Liverpool, but they have them all over the world. So that's a great way to meet other writers. And so I fell in love with the genre. I fell in love with the community. They're like super supportive. Eventually got an agent, and I continued writing. My first book was actually nonfiction for children. It's called Narrative Nonfiction. And the genre that I've been published in is called middle grade, which is for 8 to 12 year olds. And so published that back in 2019. It came out in October. So I had like a season before COVID, which was great. Yeah. And then this new one comes out this May, and it's fiction. So totally different kind of book, but has some similarities. So it's called The Minor Miracle. Since we've got a little video going, I can show it to you. But I wrote down, you know, I think one of the hardest things is when someone says, what's your book about? And you start just rambling. I'm working on it. It comes out in May. By May, this will just like roll off my tongue, but this is what it's about. So it's a middle grade, and Noah Miner, the main character, when he's a baby, he falls off a balcony 16 stories and miraculously survives. And so it's called this Minor Miracle. His last name is Minor, so it's a little play on his last name. But then he just kind of grows up and feels ordinary, and he always wonders and suspects, like, am I something special? Is something unusual about me? But he doesn't know until he turns 12 years old. And then he finds out that he actually has the power to control gravity. And so thus we're kind of put into the supernatural world of gravitars and gravitas and these other people, these other kids that are also finding out they have this ability. So then he has to figure out how to access his power. And then once he gets it, he has to learn how to control it. So a lot of the plot is involved in this accessing and controlling his power and living in the two worlds, in the real world, and then also in this training world of learning how to become a gravitar. And then there's also this whole element of having to decide who to trust, because as he trusts Gravitas, who can offer him training, and someday he'll be this agent of this top secret in this top secret organization, or does he trust this uncle who happens to be the Gravitas most wanted? And we'll find out he's the one that actually dropped Noah off that balcony when he was a baby. So there's this whole plot about him as well. So that's the book in a nutshell.
That sounds really cool. If I was like 8 to 12, that'd be right up my street. I used to love Artemis Fowl. I don't know if you read
Oh yeah. Love Artemis Fowl as well. Love that voice.
It's the adventures, isn't it? And when you're that age, when you can lose yourself in a book that can take you somewhere, and with characters that can do these amazing things like defy gravity. So how do you sort of get into that sort of mindset where you can create these places and stories that kids just want to lose themselves in?
I think part of it is staying in the world, like remembering, keeping myself full of the books that are working for me and really learning from, like, okay, this is how they did this. This is how they did that. And so there's some books that I looked at a lot. Stuart Gibbs has the Spy School series, and I loved that. And then there's another series, the Last Kids on Earth series, which is like another kind of superhero-ish feeling book. And it's basically the kids as superheroes. But I think the thing that really like helps me engage and get a book that's going to resonate with kids is that it has to resonate with me. So I try and figure out, like, okay, what are the themes that I'm playing around with here? And then putting myself back in the headspace of being a kid. And I have kids, I'm around kids a lot. And so trying to mesh those two things, like, even though I am adult, like getting in touch with that like inner child and seeing what's working with kids already out there, honestly, like just staying engaged, like when you go through a revision, more revision, more revision, all these different versions, you've got to stay interested and excited for that book. And so creating characters that are interesting to me, and plots, it's just, yeah, it's a whole mesh of all that kind of stuff. But I think the magic, like the secret sauce, is me being excited and engaged in that world as well. Just like, I want to live there. I want to do that stuff,
So you mentioned a few interesting things there. Like themes, like what's the story about? So do you place a lot of emphasis on the themes of your story before you start writing, or is that something that you just sort of pick up as you go? Because everyone has their own approach, don't they? It's a really interesting one theme I find amongst authors.
I think to avoid being didactic and having a book that feels very message driven, I actually don't really know what I'm writing about until I'm writing it, as far as the theme goes. And so I'm kind of discovering that, which is part of the fun, because I'm discovering something about myself. And if I wrote this book 10 years from now, it would probably have a different theme because I'd be going through something different at that time. So whatever I'm, like thinking about, stewing over, is going to make its way into that book. And so I don't start off like, this is what I want kids to learn, but there is something that like resonates with what I'm going through in my life or whatever, and that's what I'm going to bring to the table in the book as well. So
Nice. That's cool. And your characters then, so Noah Miner, from what I've read of the book so far, really sort of you want to follow him and you want to see what happens. How did you approach creating him as a character?
I don't start, I know a lot of people start with character, but I start with premise. Like that's the thing that's so interesting to me. And so I started wanting to write a book where we were in a world where something fantastical was possible to anybody. And so I hate to bring up Harry Potter because it's like it's such a big thing, but I think that there's something so appealing about like anybody could get that letter. Like Harry didn't know that was coming to him. And so same thing with Noah Miner. He thinks he's ordinary. He's trying to figure out like how can I distinguish myself in my student body? Maybe I'll try for basketball. I'm good at that. And has no idea that he's like capable of this incredible stuff. And so I just love creating that feeling. So I started with that. Then I'm like, okay, what kind of character? What kind of personality? What's he look like? How can I create a character that plays on that idea? And so I've got this kid that's very tall and lanky. He's the tallest kid in his class, one of the tallest kids in the school, which makes him feel a little bit awkward. He feels like everybody's always looking at him, but they don't really have anything worth looking at because he's just kind of ordinary. And so he's a disappointment. He doesn't feel strong. And so then that's kind of a fun thing to play off to find out that then actually he is. I have him. There's an interesting thing about Noah in that all his life, since he found out later, he's dropped off the balcony. This thing happens to him when he gets embarrassed. His clothes suck to him. Everything like sucks, almost like if you got clothes that have static electricity out of the dryer. It's like a whoomp. And he's able to just like brush it aside. It's just this kind of weird thing that happens to him. His best friend knows about it. Other kids just kind of look at him like, you should buy some clothes that fit, or what's wrong with you? But it's not supernatural enough to be a to be like, hey, there's something magical about you. And so I wanted to give him something he was really embarrassed by that was actually pointing to his like superpower. So he has no idea that that this thing that happens to him that he's embarrassed by is actually a sign of great power. He just doesn't know how to control it or use it yet. So that's another thing that went into building that character.
Nice. So is character development a big thing in children's literature?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think like some of the most successful children's books are series that are based on a character that is beloved, you know, like so The Last Kids on Earth, the Spy Kids series, there's these characters that you want to follow. And worlds too. Like if there's an interesting world that you want to build and carry in, but for sure, kids want to know who this character is. They want to know how they can relate to him or her. And so yeah, absolutely. Character development's really important. And I would even go on to say, like, just because it's children's books doesn't mean that it's like dumbed down or you take
No.
away elements that are in adult books. So you need a fully built world. You need really well-rounded characters. You need all that stuff. I think with children's books, you just pare back some of the language. You know, it may not go as long. It may not, but I think kids are very discerning and they get bored really quick. So you need to keep them. You know, get their attention and then keep it, move it along. They don't have patience for long flowery descriptions or big several pages of dialogue. You need to keep the action in there, keep them going.
Yeah, that sounds so short, fast-paced, action-packed. And so you write adventure stories as well, particularly the series. So how do you make sure that you've got enough action in there then to keep children entertained?
My editor is happy to tell me when there's not enough action. But yeah, like this is the first, and I'm working on book two now. And so, like, not only finding out, like, is there enough action? I think some of the benchmarks, like every chapter, don't start it with dialogue, don't start it with introspection, start it with action. That's been kind of a mantra that I've been hearing a lot from my editor, and I think it's true. And then, you know, chapter endings, leave it on a cliffhanger. Let's keep us to the next chapter. And so it doesn't have to be a totally plot driven book. There's plenty of really successful children's books that are character based and maybe even slower paced, but I think you've got to have some sort of movement. You got to have some sort of growth. And so like catching yourself with those benchmarks is really good and important. And we were talking earlier, like even in your dialogue, breaking that up with some action and thinking about like, what is my character doing in the space that they find themselves? Just like in an adult book, like you need to have that kind of stuff. You need to place your reader and then you need to remind them where they're at. Oh, they're in a kitchen. There's going to be a table or a chair. Oh, there's this thing in here. And that's one way you can find action, you know, in micro actions, I guess you could say. But really, it's those big actions that propel the story forward. And so you want them moving around. You want them. It would be really hard. And I think when I first wrote the first book, The Minor Miracle, there were a lot of scenes taking place in like a classroom. And it was a challenge to try and figure out, okay, how do I get them to move? Like with the rules that I've created in this world, they still got to get out. They got to move around. There's got to be things happening. So it's not e always easy, but I
Oh.
think looking at it chapter by chapter and making sure you've got your character moving around is important for kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the questions which you kind of answered already was the differences between writing for children and writing for an adult, for example. And you said that you'd approach it in the same way. You just pare it back a bit. How would you sort of go about doing that? Paring
How would I
things
go
back?
about pairing it back?
Yeah,
Yeah.
because it's a big, I mean, world building, and I'm sure you've read some fantasies where the world building has just been too much,
Yeah.
and you get consumed by unnecessary information. So it is a big problem, even for like writing for any age, but I
Yes.
imagine for children in particular,
Yeah. Yes.
it's even
I
more.
think it's so important to be spare, and one of the just strategies that I use is for every draft that I start, so not just the book, but for every draft of that book, I always start a new document that I call my delete document. And so when I find that something's getting too long, but I like one of the turns of phrases, I just anytime I take anything out of that draft, I put it in the delete draft. And I'm always amazed that my delete draft is longer than my manuscript. It's kind of a benchmark for me. So it's like, okay, I know that I've cut and I've replaced and I've put back, but I can always go back to that delete document too. So there's
Yeah.
always ways to find and fit in the things that you love. But it also is just, I think it's very, I don't know, maybe this is true for your books too. Maybe you have a delete document that's longer than your manuscript, but I just feel like it's proof that there's the well will fill. And I feel like sometimes as writers, when we write something, we're like, oh, but it's so beautiful. Like I'm afraid if I cut that, then I've lost it and I don't have something to replace it. And I think it was
Yeah.
Annie Dillard in The Writing Life has this great quote where she's like, use it, spend it, just put it in there, but don't be
Yeah.
afraid that it's going to flow. Well, I think the same thing is true, that it'll fill back up. My
Yeah.
kind of mantra, I guess, would be like, hey, if it doesn't feel right, if it's feeling long, if it's feeling too much, don't worry, just cut it. It'll
Yeah.
be fine. Like the manuscript is going to fill up. It's going to be fine. You don't need all the words. And so
Yeah.
trusting a kid, like they can get it. You don't have to fill every single thing in for them. Let them be creative. Let them imagine. Give them some space. I think
Yeah.
that's a something really unusual and different about children's books. And even talking about picture books, which are for even younger, they're generally just 32 pages. Like it's really important to leave space for the kid, even the smallest kid, to be able to imagine and bring their own selves to that book and not spell it all out for them.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I even think it's true for adults.
Yeah.
Like you don't, you wanna,
You appreciate it.
it's, I think you engage with it more when you have to think about it. And I think, yeah, it makes sense with kids if you've got less detail, they're having to think more about it, and it promotes the imagination and the creativity, and it's a brilliant thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's a danger sometimes where if you say I write children's books, they're like, oh, children's books, those are so cute. And there's so much amazing,
Yeah.
incredible work, gorgeous writing in children's books. And so, yeah, just like respecting your reader is something else that I would say is really important with children's books is respecting the kid and trusting that they're capable of carrying this and pulling the story in. So like while you don't want to get too flowery or too complicated with your language, like they can do it. They can take in some of that stuff that you may think, oh, it's not a second grade or a third grade or a fourth grade level.
Yeah.
Like within reason, give it to them and let them delight in finding something,
Yeah.
new that challenges them.
I know I just, it just popped into my head as you were talking about the sort of gauging the grade of your writing. I know there's a few different things. I mean, I in the line of work I do, we use something like the flesh readingese score, which is like it gauges how what grade it's up to basically. Do you ever use anything like that, like any tools that tells you whether you're at the sort of you pitch it at the right level or if you need to pare it
Yeah.
back a bit more?
I don't. Now, if you're doing like a work for hire for an educational publisher, then they're going to require you to do something that's going to put it through a matrix like that. And
Yeah.
it's just a little more analytical and it has to fit in a box because it's testing and all those sorts of things. But For trade publishing, like
No.
I don't.
Yeah.
But I try and stay relevant enough with the genre of just like reading and knowing that it's kind of like ingrained in me. So it's like, okay, I get the feel, I get, and I want, there's so, even there's so much breadth of like
Yeah.
books for 8 to 12 year olds. And so I find the ones that are like my mentor texts that I'm like, okay, these ones I'm gonna keep stacked right here. And it's gonna keep me in that flavor because they've
Yeah.
already established it. Like these are the best sellers, these are the ones that are being published. So if I can stay in that same flavor, then I'm fine.
Yeah, I think that is a really great bit of advice. Just like read what you're gonna write, and it, for anything. I mean, when my brother-in-law asked me to have a think about writing, it's like a picture book. He was gonna do the illustrations. First thing I did was went out and bought all the Roald Dahl books. So it was just it. I've read them all when I was a kid. I didn't go back and read them because I'm not started writing it yet, but. That's like one of the best ways to learn is by looking at someone who inspired you and seeing how
Did you
they did
enjoy
it.
them a second time around
I
as an
didn't.
adult?
I haven't read them yet.
Oh, okay. I'm curious. We'll have to get back on.
That project's on the back burner. Too much going on. I will get to it because it's something I really want to do. I have the story all mapped out in my head. It just needs to for writing.
Awesome. Yeah,
Yeah.
you should do it. You should do it. That's, yeah. I mean, like when people ask me, like, what's your best part of advice, which you're probably going to ask me later, but it's like, do it. Just start because, and I do think like reading is such an important thing. And I'm so curious to see what you're, because I think as adults, we take in children's books differently. There's part of us that's like a nostalgia, like, oh, I
Yeah.
remember loving this and I love it so much. But there's also like our new selves that can delight in the book in a whole different way. So
Yeah.
I hope you like them as much now. I loved the Roald Dahl is the reason I started writing children's books,
Oh,
honestly. And
really?
it's funny because as a kid, I didn't read them. They just didn't, they weren't in my, I read a ton. I was a big reader, but for some reason, somehow I missed Roald Dahl. And so I was almost angry when I found him as an adult. I was like, I'm grieving for the child in me that needed these
Yeah,
books and wanted them and would have loved them so much. So, but like, yeah, the BFG and James and the Giant Peach and all those, I just love them so much. And that's like, I was sitting at an ad agency using my advertising degree and miserable. And a friend of mine was like, did you ever read James and the Giant Peach? And I'm like, no. And I started reading it in my cubicle and I'm like, I'm leaving this place. I went and got a job at an independent bookstore.
there you go. That's an amazing story. It's just that's what it takes, isn't it? I can relate to that as well. I was a lawyer, and at the time, I was reading a lot of fantasy that I used to read when I was a kid and well, teenager, and a lot of good times from back then. And it sort of sparked something in me, and I quit my job. That was it.
Oh, I love it.
So yeah, get it
Take the
completely done,
leap.
rather. Yeah, exactly. That's what you got to do. You've got it, like you said before. You just got to do it. If it makes you happy and motivates you, then do it.
Absolutely.
I know. So one thing I want to ask you, because you said you've worked with a lot of illustrators, and particularly this book, it's an illustrator book. What's the experience like of working alongside an artist?
Oh, it's so fun. So, I was so fortunate with the Minor Miracle because with middle grade, sometimes you just get like a cover illustration, which is also super cool because you get to see what the envision is for the cover. But to have the spot illustrations within was just like a huge gift. It was so fun. But I didn't write it that way in the beginning. You never know if your publisher is going to do that or not. You can
Yeah.
ask, but just depends on so much like budget and all those sorts of things. So when they said, and they offered the contract and we're like, we're thinking about putting this many illustrations, I was like, I got to work. I was like, awesome. So then you look at your manuscript in a whole different way because you're looking at, okay, where would I put the pictures? And thinking about like making sh it makes you think of your work visually. And
Yeah.
so like, do I have a moment? And if you get to a chapter and there's no moment to visualize, there's a problem. It was a great revision exercise to just think of it that way. Like
Yeah.
what picture would I put in this chapter? Because I knew that every chapter would get at least one picture. And the other thing that I think is interesting to talk about for people that don't know a whole lot about how children's books work is in picture books, so for the 32-page picture books, if you don't illustrate and you don't have an illustrator, which publishers are fine with that, you send your words to the publisher and then they find what illustrator they want to put with it. They may or may not ask your opinion or suggestions about what you see. And then they bring the illustrator in and you're not involved in that process at all. After the illustrator is assigned the manuscript, they go off and illustrate it. And you can put in a few very brief notes, but only if it's really important. Like if it's something that's ha supposed to be happening in the illustrations, but you haven't said it and it's integral to the plot. And so, like, you have to think of a picture book as 50-50, and you bring 50% of the story, which may feel like 100% to you because it was like you that generated the idea, and then you let it go. And then the illustrator comes in, and they, a lot of times in picture books, the illustrations tell more than what's in the words, whether it's something different or they're just like fleshing out what you've said, but they're not always mirroring the text. But with a middle grade, so like a chapter book for these 8 to 12-year-olds, the illustrations are mirroring what's happening. So like, oh, I just talked about this and this is what it looks like. And so the process with that, I got to do more detailed illustration notes. And in fact, a lot of times the illustrators don't even read the whole manuscript. Like they've got a lot of projects going on. And so you just give them like, hey, here's what's happening in this scene. And this is the way it works. So the way it worked with Billy Young is the illustrator. Billy Young is he lives in Singapore. And I haven't met him yet, but I hope I do someday. But he started off with just character sketches. And so that was really cool. He there's this illustration, if you happen to see this, he has at the very beginning of the book these characters all drawn. And so we kind of agreed on, yes, this is how this person looks. And we went back and forth a little bit. This person's too tall or different hair color, all that kind of thing. Once we got the character sketches and he had that straight, then he worked on the cover sketch and then we handed him the illustration notes. And at that point, like I don't directly email Billy at all. The publisher is the go-between. And so my publisher received the notes and then they worked with Billy and they went back and forth. And I don't know, it was like this mysterious process. And then one day I got preliminary sketches. And so they sent all those to me and said, hey, is this kind of what we're thinking? And so, and I'm like totally respectful of Billy. Like I would only say something if I'm like, actually, it's not like that. The text says this. So I can either change the text or, and sometimes I wouldn't, but if it was something I didn't really care about, I could say, I can make a change to the text or we can change the illustrations. And honestly, like changing the text at some point is harder because it's been typeset and everything than having the illustrator change. So there's a bit of a push and pull between like who's going to make the change. Is it going to be the people in design or is it going to be the illustrator? And then so we went through, did the preliminary sketches, then he went off and worked on final art. And then I got to see it one more time and give like that final nod. So like looking at all the details. And my editor's brilliant. Like she noticed stuff I didn't notice. I feel like sometimes she knows the story better than I do, but she would notice stuff. Oh, did you see this little thing? So that it was a really cool process. And actually, like the first book was illustrated with pictures, with photographs that I had taken, and it's a nonfiction, so very different process. So I'm looking forward to working with him again on book two. And actually, some of his illustrations have informed what happens in book two. So that's been cool. Like I never expected for him to influence what happens, but some of the they've sparked ideas. So it seriously is a collaboration.
It is, yeah. I think it's amazing, isn't it? How you work with these like really talented people and they help bring what you've got in your head to life. It's hard to get that into other people's heads, but when they're able to do it, bloody hell, it does not blow you away. And I think an example I always like, it could be any kind of artwork. The what's it called now? The what Bernard Cornwell series. That was on Netflix. I
Oh,
can't
wait, what's it
remember.
called again? The Caldwell?
Bernard Cornwell is
I don't think I know it. Darn.
The Last King or something like that. But it's about the Viking, the half Viking, half Englishman, or Saxon. And Uhtred Be from Uhtred of Bevanbert. What's that show called? I can't remember. But
And it could be a different title if it came out at a different title here in America. I don't know.
yeah, maybe. But the main character is Uhtred of Bevanbert. I've got to get some kind of point for that. But Bernard Cornwell loved how it came to life on the screen that much that he devoted the final book to the actor who played the character Uhtred. So it just
Oh,
goes to
wow.
show, like, it is a collaboration and people can bring
Wow.
things to life. Like, even an actor can bring a character to life. And I think that's really,
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
yeah.
Absolutely. It's so cool. And it requires some humility. Like, it's interesting to speak to people that, and they're like, wow, doesn't that drive you crazy that you're not in control? But
Yeah.
actually, if you realize that they're bringing this huge talent, it's a gift. Like, it's going to make it cooler,
Yeah.
not take anything away. It adds to it. So, yeah.
Nice. The Last Kingdom, it was called, that series. I googled
Wait, what's
it.
it called again? Say one more time.
The Last Kingdom.
Oh, The Last Kingdom.
Yeah. Yeah,
Maybe I've seen
it is
it.
good. It's good. It's
Yeah. I'll check it out. It's on
action
Netflix?
packed. Yeah, action packed.
Okay.
It's based on the books as well. So yeah. Thank you very much for listening to today's show. This is just a very quick break to share some messages from our sponsors. This is a paid advertisement by Fictionary. Fictionary is a tool that offers writers a structured approach to editing. It was created by best-selling author Christina Stanley and was designed using her knowledge and insights. Let's face it, not many writers enjoy editing. It can be laborious, and with so much to analyze and consider, it can be tough to get right to. Fictionary seeks to tackle these problems. After you upload your manuscript and enter the details of your scenes and chapters and the nature of your book, it'll present you with graphics and overviews that analyze your story. It breaks down things like character arcs, story arcs, and it can measure the development of your story compared to what would be expected by other readers in the genre. Fictionary also offers the opportunity to get key developmental help with your stories, and this can help you adjust and tweak the structure so that it flows like a river. It takes you through a very simple process that guides you through the process of building your story up layer by layer. It can help beginner writers, and it can also help experienced writers too, which makes it a very unique and useful tool. I've used the tool myself, and I found the visual overviews and the analysis very helpful indeed. The more time you spend using the tool, the more familiar you become with its analytical functions, and that will see you get the very, very best results. So if you're looking for more advanced support with your editing, but you don't quite have the budget for an editor, try Fictionary. It's free for 14 days, and you don't have to enter any credit card information to get that trial. And also, as a very special offer to listeners of the Fantasy Writers Toolshed, you can get 25% off the first 6 months of your monthly subscription or 6 months off the first year of your annual subscription. The code is FWT25, and you can head to fictionary.co/FWT to find out more. So, one thing I was going to ask you, we've got a really good insight into working with, illustrators and artists. What has your experience been like of working with agents, and how's it like the process of getting an agent and then pitching it to editor, your book to editors and stuff like that? How's all that been for you?
Yeah. It took a long time to find my agent, but when I found her, I stuck with her. So we've been together since 2012,
Nice.
and she really got my work and was, I think, when people are looking for agents, so how did I get that agent? I sent my manuscript to lots of different agents and started building relationships with people who
Yeah.
would like my work but weren't ready to sign me on yet. And so I just continued to send them if they showed interest and they said, I like your work, but not this project. I was always writing, I was always developing something new. So then I would just send them next project and send them the next project. And sometimes they would move agencies. So just kind of keeping good records of where people are and who said what.
Yeah.
And it just kind of was almost like a funnel where it finally came to where there was just a few that I had these good relationships with. And I was like, we're so close.
Yeah.
And you mentioned I got my MFA at Vermont College of Fine Arts. And so that was an MFA in writing for children and young adults. And she knew these editors or these agents that were I was close with knew that I was going to attend that school. And they said, wait, don't submit to us till you get out because your work's going to get even stronger, which was like frustrating, but
Yeah.
finished. and ended up sending a manuscript to a couple of them and had conversations with them. And this one, her name's Alyssa Eisner-Hinken, and she was fantastic and just had a great vision for not just that manuscript, but for my work, like for just like, here's where I see you. And it's continued to be very collaborative. And so like having a call once or twice a year and talking about my goals and what's selling right now. What are you hearing? Here's what I think. What do you think? Has been really helpful. It's been good that she's close to New York. So she's close to the publishing houses and she's able to take those publishers and editors out to lunch and just kind of have her finger on the heartbeat of that. And then the way that the submissions work is really just, we'll get a batch. So she actually is kind of like my first editor. And when she will not send something out just because I've finished it, she wants to make sure she feels good about it and that she has a vision for where to send it. So I think that's been something I've learned is like, wow, I have all these books that I've actually finished that she's not sending out, but she doesn't see a place for them in the market right now. And so we hold on to those it's kind of like once you send it out, she'll batch them and she'll send them to five or six different publishers on a submission round. And then we wait to hear back from them and we're collecting advice. And maybe some of them are still telling us something that maybe will help me revise it for the next round. Yeah. And then if nobody buys on that first round, we'll usually go out for a second round. And I think we've even sometimes gone out for a third round, but my publishing journey is really interesting because this book that's coming out in May was the first book that we sent out, and we sent it out on two rounds. And as we were sending it out, like that takes forever to hear back from a publisher. And so I was working on other things. So then I started another novel and we got that one ready. And so when this book came out of the second round and still didn't have anybody buying it, we put it on the shelf and we sent out something else. And then went through that whole process with something else and finally hit it with my third book that we sent out. That's the book that sold, and that sold to Scholastic and has gone on to sell like over 150,000 copies. So it did great, but we had to catch it, you know? And so this book came back out and I revised it, and then the timing was right. And we found the publisher. And, you know, it's just a cool story how I found my editor too. It was my agent's idea, but on my first book, because it was nonfiction, I was actually over in Rwanda in Africa doing some research and met a school teacher there who taught in Houston, which is another city in Texas. And we just started talking, and she's African American. And I asked if she would read it because my main character is Rwandan. And I was like, can I get she became like a sensitivity reader for me for her own 2 feet, my first book. She ended up over the years, she decided to stop teaching and get into publishing. Nice. And so then she worked at several different publishers, and she's actually the one that acquired the book that's coming out in May. So I love that story. Yeah.
Nice. Nice long-term strategy.
I mean, and kind of like a long way to say that it's all about relationships. And so any way that you can build a relationship to find the agent or to find the editor, whether you're contacting them online or going to a conference or, you know, there's little touch points. And I think if you're patient and you just keep putting all the feelers out, at some point you're going to find your people. You're going to find the editor and the agent that resonate with your work.
Yeah.
And if you're persistent, they're seeing that you're in it into the industry. You're not just like a one-hit wonder that's going to write one book and then not make any more money for them. So it's a lot of work, but it's also it's fun because you're making relationships with lots of people. And it's been great.
It is. It's networking, isn't it? So it comes down to networking.
Absolutely.
And building contacts and stuff like that. And it's so fun for writers because not a lot of writers enjoy doing that side of things, speaking to people.
Yeah. I'm actually very much an introvert, but I'm able to turn it on and then go take a nap.
It's just exhausting when you do it.
Yeah.
It's like you use all your energy.
It can be tiring. Yeah. I think it's also hard before you have a contract to have confidence. And so I think it's really important to like go forward in confidence. Like you have the work, even if you don't have the contract, and so much luck and stars aligning have to happen for you to actually get the contract, and all that you can control is your work. And so continuing to generate and work and, you know, put your butt in the chair and get your work done, like that's eventually like your sweat equity is going to build up.
Yeah. It's really interesting what you said as well about trying a book and realizing that it's just not the right time for, like, in terms of where the markets are.
Yeah.
And I did get a little flavor of that. I've been querying agents at the minute, and one of the responses was that it wasn't the right, market conditions weren't right. I don't know if that's a stock answer now. It could be.
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
I get the vibe. Like, I mean, from what I know from speaking to a few agents and publishers, it's a lot of romance, you know,
Oh,
in the
yeah.
fantasy genre. A lot of
Yeah.
YA, a lot of paranormal fantasy
Right.
romance. And
Yeah, it's
so
interesting. What do you do with that? Do you go write a romantasy if that's not your thing,
I
or do you
know.
just like wait it out? I mean, it's constantly changing. This
I know. That's the
the
problem.
whatever's, yeah, it's constantly changing. So you really, I don't think you should or can if that's not authentic to
Yeah.
what you write, you know.
No. It's like, well, it takes you like, I don't know how long, how fast a writer you are, but I can only write part time. So it might take me like 18 months to do a novel.
Yeah.
Like, what's going to be the vibe in 18 months?
No, yeah.
Be
You gotta
vampires or something?
be, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It could be something that doesn't even exist right now.
Know.
But I think, yeah, like if you're gonna invest 18 months on something, it has to be something you love too. Like if you
Yeah.
think romanticism is dumb, then you don't want to spend 18 months on it. Like, why would you even write? Like
Yeah.
it just, I think sometimes we get backwards in our head, especially when we're pursuing an agent and publishing, and we start getting so focused on that that we forget, we have to like remind ourselves, okay, why am I writing? Where's my
Yeah.
joy? And then bring yourself back to it. It's this constant push and pull. 'Cause I mean, marketing is not fun for me. I don't like it. And like going out there and finding, and I get mad. It's not like I'm okay with the fact that when I hear, oh, this isn't the right market for this, I'm like, well,
Yeah.
you know, I and there's always other outliers that are being published, even if it's not the market for it. So I just kind of, I don't know what you do with that feedback other than just like say, okay, well, they didn't say it was bad. They just said it wasn't the market. So maybe there's somebody else who
Yeah.
disagrees.
It's a really good point though that you make. It's like, do you write? Because I've interviewed someone recently who he decided he wanted to be a writer, and his approach was rather than write something that he was going to be happy writing and passionate about and get some sort of satisfaction out of, he had a look at what people were searching for on Amazon but not finding. So he was looking for gaps in markets, and he wrote the gaps. He filled the gaps. So
Did
that's
it
the
work?
approach. It worked for him.
Yeah. Well, I think there's something to be said for then to me, it becomes almost like a puzzle or a game. And I
Yeah.
do like, I'm kind of a nerd and I love to get an assignment and be like, oh yeah, I can do this. And so, like, my agent is like a great generator of ideas. And so sometimes I will just ask her. I was speaking to a writer the other day, and she said for her publisher, she had a picture book come out and she said, what are you looking for? And she said, and she was like, I could do that. And so she then went and got excited about it. So whether, I
Yeah.
guess what comes first, the chicken or the egg. And so there is something to be said for knowing that if you write something that's out there that people are looking for, or there's holes in the market, then okay, I've got the marketing part of this covered. I've already
Yeah.
done that part. And so now I'm going to go find how I connect to that subject and how I can do it and make it my own or whatever. So
Yeah.
like,
That's a good
yeah.
approach. Like what you say though is see what's out there, make a short list and see what you connect with. Don't just
Right.
force yourself to a writer. I
Right.
think you've got to enjoy it, haven't you? Because it's such a big commitment.
It's such a huge commitment. Yeah. And
Yeah.
I think too, if you're not, it's going to come through in your writing. So if it's not a genre that you love or know very well or read very well, then it's going to, you're not going to sound authentic at all. You're going to
Yeah.
sound like an imposter.
One question I always ask everyone who comes on the show is, what is the biggest challenge you've encountered in your writing, and how have you overcome it?
Yeah, I like that question. I think my biggest problem, or I guess I shouldn't say problem, my challenge is that I love to be, have you heard the term pantser and plotter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so pantser, like I love to be a pantser. I love to just sit down and start writing and come up with these crazy ideas and follow a bunny trail. And that's where I find my energy. It's where my like writing is the most inspired.
Yeah.
And so I have a harder time being a plotter, but I'm finding that I not only write myself into a mess if I pants, but I don't, yeah. So I don't know. I get to a certain point, I've wasted a lot of time. I have a ton of material, but I don't know what to do with it. And so I've had to kind of find a blend of what works for me with starting out with some sort of frame and bones and then writing. And honestly, I put the bones together. I get myself from the beginning to the end. I kind of figure out the big, I love the image of like a line that's like hanging and swagged in between. And so what are the little poles? What are the little nails in the wall that it's swagging between? And so that's been really helpful for me. And I never look back at it. So I start and I'm like, is this going to make sense if I did it this way? And I hate it. I hate that process. I have a really hard time generating and thinking that far forward, which is why I want to be a pantser. And so, but if I force myself to do that, even if that's not actually where it ends up, I can go back to it if I need to. I rarely do. I rarely go back and say, am I aligning with what I set out in the beginning to do? But I think it forces my brain to work out some problems in the beginning. And so then when I do like kind of unleash myself to go pants for a while, I've got that in me. Like I've had to work on it and it was hard. And so now it's kind of ingrained in me and it sends me in the right direction. So it sets the rudder. I guess. And I love, there's a book that's called Save the Cat, which some people just hate, 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 but I think it's helpful for just the bones and the structure. But there's so many of them. I mean, I don't think it really matters. As long as you've got somebody who's studied the story, figured out whether it's the hero's journey or whatever it is that you use, if it, none of that's going to stick anyways. Like you're going to come through it. And it's also prescriptive. So when I come back, I do go back and I make kind of a new one. And I'm like, okay, if this is what I want to make my story work, if there's something that doesn't feel quite right, I can usually figure out what's not working by going back and laying that on top of it and being like, oh, my midpoint's totally off. Like it's 60 pages too far into the story. Or, oh, my midpoint is actually what's happening over here, but I didn't treat it like a midpoint. And so it's helpful to me. So it's helped me to blend. That's the hardest part was having to be a plotter. I found a happy medium.
No, it's amazing, isn't it? You just like over time you realize what you need and you sort of adapt. And I was the other way. I was a rigid plotter. And I found that the stories are too formulaic. And naturally just wanted to start as you sort of you get to know your characters a bit more and you put them through the trials and tribulations of your story, you learn more about who they are, what feels natural to them. And that's why I don't like plotting too rigidly now. Like I'll have, like you say, just loose scaffolding. This is where they need to get to. This is roughly what's going to happen. Let's see. Let's
Give
just
you
play
some
it
freedom.
out. Let's play it
What
out.
would you say most fantasy writers are more plotters or pantsers?
I don't know. So you get a lot of plotters because people spend a lot of time world building, they love constructing these all these different things. And then if you want to fit all that in, you've got to plot a story so that it all melds together.
You need a
I
map.
mean, naturally as well, like when I think of fantasy, I think of like grand adventures, like epics, Lord of the Rings. And I think, yeah, it's a lot of that, isn't it? What do you think?
I think, well, first of all, I can't, and I don't know. I like to read fantasy, but I can't imagine building that big of a world. I can't imagine stepping out of the children's genre, actually, because I'm so entrenched in it. But I think you're right that like when you build something that big with so many intricate little details, I don't know how you would pants all of that. Like I think, but and I don't I'm not, I guess I wouldn't say that I think it's a bad thing to be a plotter either. I think every single person is different in their process and their creative like process. And so you have to figure out what works right for you. And so I think when I was a younger writer, I was constantly like going to conferences and trying to figure out like this is what's going to work. And so I didn't want to hear that it may just take some years and some trial and error and some process to like figure out what's going to work for me because I wanted it right then. I wanted to
I
figure it
know.
out. And maybe some people are lucky and they figure it out right away. But for me, it took me a long time.
Yeah, I
But
agree. Yeah, you've got to try things.
you have to
You
know
always see
thyself.
like all the little rules, don't you? The rules of writing, and I don't like People call them rules, but you try them out, you
Yeah.
learn about them, you bend them, whatever, and
Right.
you figure out how to write in a
Mm-hmm.
way, in your own way, because you don't want to
Right.
write like everybody else, do you?
No.
You need to
Yeah.
find your voice.
Yeah,
But
I agree. That's a
yeah.
great question.
I know it's a good one. And last question then. Best bit of advice for any aspiring writers out there, what would you say?
Best bit of advice. I feel like it depends. I thought about this earlier and I was thinking, I wonder if we're talking about aspiring writer or aspiring published writer, because I think there's a difference there. And so I think if my best bit of advice to an aspiring writer is to just write, because I think a lot of times people romanticize writing and think they need to, well, when I have a perfect office and just the right desk and lots of time and a big chunk and all these things have to fall into place. But I think you're a writer if you write, and it may be in the carpool line, or it might be for a snatch in the evenings or in the morning or at lunch break, but that's when you become a writer. And so there's nothing special or magical necessarily about it. And so I hope that's like encouraging to whoever's out there that is just like thinking about it but not doing it yet, because it's not, it's a process. And the sooner you get started, the more you're going to get on that path, which is a great path. And then I would say that if you're aspiring to get published, you can't necessarily control all of the elements, but I think for me, and I think this is also really essential in children's books, is that you just have to retain hope
Yeah.
and keep your focus sometimes off of the end goal, which is a contract, and on what you can accomplish. So like making little goals for yourself of like when you write and what you write, like how at the time, and making sure you're putting the pages in, because every no that you get, and you're going to get a ton of them, is just kind of like, I always told myself, if when I got a no, I'm like, okay, well, that's the one that's that much closer to the yes. Like I pictured it on a timeline and there is a yes out there somewhere. And so each time I'm hitting a no, I'm just inching along on that timeline closer to the yes. And that was encouraging to me, that like, in a way, it was a victory, even if it was a no. And
Yeah.
so, yeah, I think like finding a way, where's your hope, and where, how do, finding that somehow, that encouragement when you're in the face of a lot of rejections. It's
Oh
hard to be an
yeah.
aspiring, to aspire to publish. But
That's great
yeah.
advice though, and that's the kind of advice that keeps you going.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope so. It has for me.
Yeah.
It's worked for me.
Meredith, thank you so much for giving up your time. It's
Yeah.
been one of the One chat I'm definitely looking forward to listening back to, because I think we've covered a lot, and we've talked an awful lot about like really good advice, and particularly like writing children's books as well. Your insights have been amazing, so thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. It's been such a pleasure. I love hopping across a genre to talk about some like adult versus children, and I love just talking to other writers, no matter where they are. It's been really fun.
Yeah, it
So I
has, yeah.
appreciate it.
Oh, no
And your
problem.
questions have helped me think through stuff that maybe I haven't thought about yet. So it's been really
Yeah,
helpful.
it's good, isn't it? Thinking aloud, just
Yeah,
talking
it's
about
great.
stuff. But yeah,
Been a great conversation.
thank you. And good luck with the release of A Minor Miracle as well. I'm
Thank
going to
you.
put the link in the description, so do go and check it out. It's available for pre-order, I think, when this episode will go out. But where's the best place to go if anyone would like to learn a bit more about you?
Yeah, so I can give that to you. It's my website. And so it's Meredith L. Davis. www.meredithldavis.com.
Nice. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
Put a link
I
to
can
that in
send
the
it to you.
description as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you again, Meredith. It's been wonderful. And
You're so welcome.
yeah. And thank you
Yeah, it's been
everyone at
great.
home for listening.
Well,
I'll
good
speak
luck,
to you soon.
everybody.
Good luck.
I hope you put some beautiful stories out there.
Bye bye.